He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Thursday. It is the Thursday. It is the post-Fed announcement decision day here. The Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide fee-based only money management firm. And I'm here with our chartered financial analyst, Barry Kite, who will be weighing in a bit on what Chairman Powell had to say yesterday. The market does not like it, that is for sure. The market, the NASDAQ was down yesterday 209 points, which reflects the higher PE end of the market, obviously. And today it's down another 167 points, or 1.24%. The Dow is down 60 basis points, about half of the percentage points of the NASDAQ. That's because there's lower PE stocks in the Dow. The Dow's at 34,243. The S&P is down 43. We're clear back to 43.58. Does that set us up for a nice move to 4,700 between now and the end of the year? Well, we'll see. Crude oil is up $1.12 to 90.78. Gold is down $32. Here is the problem. Are you ready for this? The 10-year is up 14 basis points to 4.48%. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, on the day after a hawkish talk. How do I know it was hawkish? Barry, have you seen the 10-year? I sent out a tweet as soon as I saw that. Hey, now this that it's morning, X, right? Are we still sending out tweets, or what am I sending out now? Messages?
Well, for a while it was Twitter. You're sending out tweets, X, formerly known as tweets, I guess. But now I don't know if you're sending out X's, because now I'm starting to hear where they're starting to not put that the Twitter piece before it anymore. So
a little birdie,
It's in that transition phase. But yeah, I guess they're X's. We need to ask Elon.
Yeah, sure. I also sent out an urgent message way before the market opened this morning to our clients, to our subscribers. Just a shocking move in the 10-year. You know, I thought it would hold around 4.36, 4.35. What I didn't know is how hawkish Chairman Powell would be yesterday. He did not hike interest rates yesterday.
The hawkish pause, or the hawkish skip, or whatever.
The market hiked rates for him, right? He didn't need to hike rates. 14 basis points today. We're at 4.49. Now, you got to go back to 2007, the fall of 2007, which preceded the fall of the S&P 500 in 08 and 09. The question is he tipping us into a recession and into a bear market, or was he just kind of jawboning yesterday to keep everybody in line? But the market has taken some evasive action here. I think the market's also a little worried about September 30th, which is just 9 days from now, and a government shutdown.
Okay? Yes, and the UAW, of course, the ongoing UAW strike. Although some of that stuff could potentially be recessionary, right, and lead to lower rates in the future. But I think the biggest thing yesterday was just that dot plot. Every few meetings or so, they come out with their economic projections. Everybody's got to throw their averages into the ring, right? And what that looked like was essentially the Fed is predicting, lowering rates 50 basis points less than initially thought for 2024. So where the market may have been expecting, right, these you know, a potential rate cut, right? Rate cuts in 2024. Those cuts, at least from a projection standpoint, have been, you know, lowered in terms of percentages, meaning.
Yeah, they were pushed out a little further, right?
Right, because the economy continues to be resilient, which feeds into the weekly jobless claims today, but, you know, we'll get to that in a little while. But it's a, you know, it's just, like you said, shocking in terms of, you know, when you look at it at 4.47, that's a big, you know, one day move, in that rate.
Well, and that shrinks the multiple by about 50 basis points. So a P.E. that was 18.8 is headed towards 18. I'm obviously, we'll see what happens tomorrow, but I'm going to have to lower my multiple for my target prices for the S&P 500 based on the rising interest rates. You know, I think folks are learning, and I've known it for a long time, is interest rates really have a massive impact on the economy, on the stock market, and on the bond market.
I mean, particularly in stock valuation, because,
yeah.
There's an R there, an I, you know, or an I, right, in any equation, and that's the interest rate. Right?
The prevailing interest rate,
yeah.
Exactly. And I don't think most people realize that interest rates have such an impact on stocks, but you're seeing it on a daily basis. You know, my neighbor asked me all the time, are we going to have a recession? Are we going into a recession? He asked me yesterday. And, you know, you just said it. I see these jobless claims going down again. It's hard to say that we're going into a recession when the jobs market remains so strong. Now, that would be the last shoe to drop. But we're not seeing a lot of warnings here from tech, from the airlines, from the travel and leisure industry, from the consumer industry yet, anyways. And the job market, which would start to crinkle a little bit, started to see some layoffs. That's not happening. The only warnings I've really seen is at the lower end, because a lot of that money sloshing around from COVID relief and different programs that they initiated during COVID coming to an end. That's higher gasoline prices. But that's at the lower end of the spectrum. And I'm not seeing any signs yet, okay, of a recession. You know, the 2-year is at 5.20. Now, another way to look at this, Barry, and we've said it before, this creates competition for stocks. You know, why take risks trying to get 8 or 9, 10% out of the stock market with all the volatility that comes with it when you can lock in the next 2 years at 5.2%, right, on a 2-year note,
right,
and just hold on to that thing? Of course, it's taxable. The income you get is taxable. You got to take that into account. But anyways, it does create competition for stocks, which didn't have much competition since 2008.
Right.
Because you had interest rates next to zero. Everybody was looking for some kind of return somewhere other than interest rates in the bond market, in CDs and savings, etc. And, you know, this is also going to translate into CDs and passbook savings. And, you know, people may also be a little bit more reluctant to go out and buy riskier assets.
Yeah, and it's competition for commodities, too, right? High interest rates are, you know, take gold, for instance, right? And there's a lot of different things that affect that. But, you know, gold, you know, essentially, right, it has a negative yield because it usually costs money to store it. And so it's competing, right, with cash, right, and, that's earning, you know, say 5% or more, right,
yeah.
In some instances. And so that's where, like you said, it's a competition, and it's a risk return, risk reward trade off.
You've also got inflation running at 5%.
So yeah.
That's a net return of zero, okay?
Yeah.
Well, I said at the end of the first half of this year, we had a really easy first half of the year, which ended on July 1st. I said we're entering into a new phase of the market. I don't think anybody can doubt that. You know, we're totally in a new phase in the market. We're in a higher interest rate, lower PE phase of the market. The pickings aren't as easy. But at the same time, I'm not seeing an end to the run yet, not based on earnings, because the earnings side of the equation, which is being ignored right now, we're hyper-focused on that multiple side of the equation. But the earnings side still looks pretty darn good. So what will win out, earnings or interest rates? In the end, earnings will win out, but that multiple is going to be tempered a little bit. A lot to talk about when we come back. It's the Best Stocks Now show. And welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, I guess the catchphrase of the day is dot plot. The dot plot show, one more hike in 2023. Well, they have, what, two meetings left? Do they have a meet? There's your assignment. Do they have a meeting in December? I know they have a meeting in November. Do they have a meeting in December?
Okay. Yep. We got, next one's October 31st, and then we'll get the rate decision on the 1st. And then the other one's December 12th and 13th, and then they're done for the year. We'll get and we get one more dot plot, and that will be the December meeting.
Well, I got to believe that the odds for a rate hike went up considerably for both November and December, because it would seem like one of those two meetings, unless, again, he was bluffing, you know. It's kind of hard to keep hiking into an economy that's starting to wobble a little bit here.
Well, and that's when you would use more words, right? And so it's funny because I was looking at the probabilities this morning. It's basically about the same as it was at the beginning of the week, right at 71% for no rate hike.
No rate hike in November.
At the next meeting. And I'm trying to find the contract.
See if there's any December.
Contract for the next one, right, is 53% chance, basically, 50-50. Of a pause.
Okay.
Yeah,
so. All right. So, anyways, we'll the see. Other catchphrase is higher for longer.
Right. That's probably the more likely scenario.
Yes.
In our opinion.
So the market always throws a hissy fit. I don't think the market really got anything that was new yesterday. And probably what was new was him just threatening. So, anyways, it'll eventually settle out, maybe by the end of today. I would just say that the interest rate sensitive stocks that should be really going higher today are not going higher today, which says that the market doesn't think that interest rates, they probably, this is, you know, now we're extended way beyond the mean. We'll get some kind of reversion back to the mean, I would think. That's what the stocks are saying, just like the oil stocks were saying earlier this week, that oil's probably not going too much higher from here after it hit about $93 per barrel earlier this week. Fed hawkish view weighs on global stock indices. Japan was down, everything down about over 1% yesterday, including Europe. Now, the Bank of England, they kept their bank rate unchanged at 5.25% in a 5-4 vote on Thursday. That's their first time that they've left rates alone in quite some time.
Yeah, that would have been a big surprise just a week ago.
Exactly.
Some of their numbers came in where it was kind of leaning potentially then in that direction, but as you can tell via, you know, they actually give us a vote, I guess, but the 5-4. So it was a close decision, and I think that's our, I want to say it's our first pause in a while. I know they went from, you know, 50 basis points to 25 basis points, just like kind of like we did. not in the so distant past, but yeah, this is, I think, the first pause for them. I'll have to take a look. But
yeah, it is. Okay, now, on the other hand, okay, Bank of America strategists have abandoned their bearish view of the S&P 500 target and adopted a more bullish view. The target has gone from 4,300, which is a little bit lower than where we are now, to 4,600. Okay, that's their end-of-year target. So you would have to say that, we've hit a pretty good buying area here in the market if Bank of America / Merrill Lynch is right. They think there's 4% upside potential. They've been pretty bearish all year. I don't know why all of a sudden they would turn bullish, other than the market has come down and it's become more of a value proposition now. But you got to be really, you have to be selective in this market right now.
Or they're bearish. Their bearish tone was kind of incorrect for for a period of time there, and so now that with the pullback, this recent pullback, they've got an opportunity to kind of change direction,
yes,
if you will,
to slip into
just from a firm, viewpoint, I guess, if you will.
All right, Kathy Wood weighs in. We always want to know what Kathy's got to say down there in Florida. A comeback in thematic investing will take hold. In other words, in her type of stocks. I noticed she was down about 2% today when the market's down about 1%, which, again, tells you that it's the high P.E. stocks taking it on the chin more than the low P.E. stocks. She says when they start to cut interest rates, potentially next year. So she's pushing out her projections quite a bit into next year. She doesn't think that the thematic investing, and all of these robo-taxis, things like that, AI, et cetera, will really come back strongly when they start cutting interest rates next year. She says, if anything, innovation gains traction during tough times. The reason our portfolios are outperforming this year, well, they were there. I think last time I looked, they were up about 35% or so. But that comes on a 65% bashing last year.
And yeah, and the level of risk there. I mean, and most of that, as you've mentioned, most of this year, right, is either kind of an AI tailwind or P expansion.
Right. She says, one by one, we're going to earn our way back. So, one stock at a time. Okay, now we got to look at oil. I said the two big bugaboos in the market are interest rates and oil. And, I did not expect interest rates to go this high, all right? Crude oil, however, has pretty much settled down at around 90. It is up a little bit today. It's at 90.39. Goldman Sachs hikes Brent crude forecast to 100, which is about 95, I guess, in West Texas.
Yeah, usually with that difference, depending on what's going on over there geopolitically. But yeah, usually about not at that price, right about a $5 difference usually.
But, and I agree with this, they say most of the rally is behind us. And like I said, as oil was going up earlier this week, and it looked like there was no end to it, the oil stocks stopped going up, late last week. So they're not behaving like, wow, we're going to see $120 oil here anytime soon. They really cooled off. So I agree with Goldman Sachs that the rally in oil, which was also driving interest rates higher, and it's bad for the economy. It's part of that hitting the lower end of the economy. The dollar generals, the discount stores, etc. Maybe that's going to start to ease up a little bit here now. And we are starting to see oil prices leveling off. We had a report, $6.25 in San Diego yesterday. Per gallon, $6.25. We'll be right back.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show. Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. The day after, you know, before the Fed announcement, the market was doing okay. I think it was not expecting. In fact, it had pretty good gains there in the morning yesterday. We were up considerably before the Fed announcement. The tech stocks were looking good. And then, so obviously, his verbiage, even though he didn't hike rates, the verbiage on the future, and I think more than anything, the dot plot, okay? Now, how married are they to the dot plot? That doesn't mean they're going to do what's on the dot plot.
Well, and yeah, and you got to remember, just as you work through different analyst expectations, right, and also factor in your own equations into the app, for example, right? The dot plot is, like I said, is a collection of thoughts from,
right,
all of the various Fed banks out there and Fed governors. And so it's, you could have vastly different opinions, right? And then have it be in the middle of one of those opinions. So
right.
it's a blend. I think if you look at the direction over time, right, is probably, more accurate than looking at the actual, right, number. And so I think that's what the, what the market was looking at yesterday is, essentially, a quarter point less hike than they were expecting on the dot plot in 2024.
Right. So. Okay, now, there is a big deal in tech today. And, I don't think the tech stocks are done. I really don't. I don't think you can stick a fork in tech.
Historically, they've been, especially your large tech, has been not a bad defensive place to be.
Yes, and, it's the earnings part of the equation mm-hmm. that gives me optimism going forward. Cisco found a deal. They bought Splunk for $28 billion. Congratulations to Splunk. Somebody had an idea at one point in time. They're kind of a security software company, and that's giving a little bit of a boost. The software stocks would be down more today. Were it not for Splunk, the Splunk deal, Cisco, will this make Cisco? Well, Cisco's trying to keep some growth going, so they're adding a growth company here to their lineup. That's the same thing that the big pharmas are doing. They're buying companies that are growing and integrating them into their company. So there's a deal for you. 31% premium. Splunk is up 31% today. Well, the current account deficit narrowed a little bit. I think that's because we're probably importing a little bit less from China. China continues to struggle. Here's another
a stronger dollar too. Over time, what we are importing, we're able to get cheaper. So,
yes, and you mentioned this yesterday about it's hard to justify higher oil prices when copper falls to a 5-week low, which is an industrial metal, and it goes lower, and it is an indicator of the global economy. I mean, a lot of people watch the price of copper. I had to run a little bit of, I had to upgrade my electricity going out to my dock and my lift that lowers and raises my boat. And he said, and it wasn't cheap. Okay, they had to run a line from my house out to the dock, redo it all with more voltage getting to the end of the dock. He said the biggest cost in all this is the copper in these cables that we're using.
Yeah.
Astronomical.
And you would expect, I mean, that's the thing, you would, you know, when you put those two, when you chart both of those two things, you know, copper and oil, you know, oil together, it just, you know, that's, it seems like there's a disconnect, and what is it, right? Is it, constrained supply? Is it artificially constrained supply when you throw in OPEC Plus? I've read a lot of things about China having a huge, they've got a huge petroleum reserve, and currently, you know, they're either, you know, they use it to either fill up or they sell it out, right?
Yeah.
So they can, you know, they've kind of, some of their demand is a little bit, is almost inelastic from the standpoint of they can pull from, they've got plenty of oil to pull from on their own, or they could go buy it elsewhere, right?
We used to have plenty of oil.
We did, yeah. That was kind of the relation of the article in terms of how much they have. You know, I think the normal thing is, I think it's 90 days. I want to say they have at least, or 60 days. I forget what the kind of what they, you know, kind of should have, apparently, whoever came up with that number. But I think there's like 120 days, 150 wow. days, something like that. So they've got lots of oil and tanks over there.
Yeah. Well, and here's another sign of the global economy. FedEx is always looked at as a kind of a bellwether because of their transportation of goods. FedEx had a really good, strong report and good guidance going forward. It's hard to say that we're going into a recession when you have unemployment numbers going down again, or the jobless claims numbers going back down, and FedEx reporting such strong numbers. It's hard to say, wow, we're headed into a recession. FedEx had an outstanding quarter, which when combined with improved earnings at FedEx Express and expense controls led to our better than expected. They blew out their numbers, especially on the bottom line.
Yeah, and the street's really behind their story, and, you know, they've done a lot of cost cutting. Of course, UPS on the other end, right? Just made their new labor deal. A lot of that deal is going to be front ended, and they're going to have a lot of expense on the front end, so that's going to hurt their near term earnings. So, in terms of shippers, right? FedEx, FedEx is kind of where that money is flowing to in terms of stock price.
Yeah. Here's an article that caught my eye yesterday. It comes from California. You know, almost all anything that catches your eye that goes, kind of makes you raise your eyebrows a little bit. They're going after warehouses, all right? They had a picture of an area there in the San Bernardino County with these massive warehouses. They gave them 2 years to lower their carbon emissions. The warehouse itself, okay? Basically, there's only two ways to lower the emissions, and that one is to install solar on these massive warehouses, which is not cheap. I mean, install solar on that?
Yeah. The thing is, they made one warehouse very big. You could have a bunch of warehouses in a bunch of different places, and that would be a higher carbon footprint, by the way.
Well, and the other way is all the trucks coming in and out of the warehouse, they got to get rid of the diesel trucks. So anyways, this was a few years ago, and now they're going to enforce it. All right. Okay, now here comes the Gestapo, the California board, the EPA board, into these warehouses to see how much carbon. And, you know, a lot of this stuff, it's not measurable, okay? How do you measure? And their comeback is, well, the people that live around these warehouses deserve to breathe clean air. This is California, all right? And there's a lot of warehouses. I mean, massive, massive. Because you're on one of the big trucking routes, Interstate 15, you know, going up clear to the Canadian border, major trucking route. So I was reading about this company, EmitWise, is a provider of carbon accounting software. And, you know, companies are going to have to start doing this. They're going to have to start reporting their carbon footprint, which is very difficult and costly to measure. But CBRE Group, which is a real estate firm,
which manages and owns and rents and leases and is in that business, is making an investment in this accounting software because it's becoming such of a big deal. And especially when you get into these scope 3 emissions, they're almost impossible to measure. But you know what? Anything they can think of to add more cost to a business owner,
right?
Well, what if, in California, they're thinking of it.
Yeah. Well, what if you're say you're just a large employer? Do you have to? Every time they take a breath, you got to recounting
the bathroom,
things.
Bathroom, have I a mean, thing above the bathroom I mean, fan. I don't know.
You thankful know, you're employing a lot of people, which if we're all breathing, I guess we emit.
Yeah,
I would
so
assume
yeah.
we emit some carbon.
I also read too that. This would be unprecedented. They want to give the striker employees unemployment benefits. They were talking about doing that for these Hollywood actors and people that work in the industry. California. Now, I think the strike may be coming to an end.
Yeah, on the writer's side. I saw they made some progress.
Yeah, they want to pay them unemployment benefit. Now, they're employed, right? They're choosing to strike. But California wants to pay them unemployment benefits to these striking workers. We'll be right back. And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, there's a few sectors and a few stocks jumping off the page here today. And I thought I'd do a little bit of comparison amongst them. We just mentioned FedEx, okay? FedEx, kind of one of the stocks of the day, especially on a day when the market is down so much. Here's my problem with FedEx. It fits into that category of a low single-digit grower. You're lucky if they'll do 5% per year over the next 5 years in growth. The Memphis, Tennessee company, which currently pays a dividend yield, 1.9%, no great shakes there. You've got a very competitive business. You've got a company that's been growing their earnings by 5% per year over the last 5 years. I see nothing to suggest that all of a sudden, that number's going to jump in any appreciable way. So when you factor in 5% growth, which is part of the equation, okay, we've got to take where their earnings are at today, which is about, they're expected to make $22 per share next year, which is nothing to sneeze at. That's pretty good. That's pretty good earnings number. But now you've got to project that out over the next 5 years and what could be a tougher business cycle. So let's just use the 5% that they had over the last 5 years and project that forward, which is pretty much where the consensus estimate is.
Yeah, and their costs are just correlated to the two things that that you don't want to be as a business in terms of fuel, right? To deliver those packages and labor. It's those are the two sticky, at least at the moment. Certainly, throw housing in there too. But of course, those two are very for employers, right? Or in businesses are the two stickiest ones. Just look at the PPI, right?
Yes.
Last week.
So if you take $22 a share, extrapolate that out at 5% a year, I mean, you're not going to have any kind of monstrous earnings and by 5 years down the road in 2030, and then you put a multiple on that, which you're not going to get a glamour multiple on FedEx. You're going to get a multiple somewhere in the mid-teens. I calculate 30% upside potential over the next 5 years. I require 75 to 80% or more. Now you can add in the dividend yield to that upside, but it's a very skinny upside potential risk to reward kind of stock, and any kind of a slowdown in the economy, you're in trouble. Now, another stock catching my eye on the other hand, which I've kind of been watching for a long time because these stocks have not participated for quite some time in market moves. But it seems to me that I, obviously with the multiple up where it is, and kind of a you know, along in the tooth expansion that eventually is going to start retracting. It's not out there yet, but it's out there somewhere. I think the market's going to get more defensive. And I was looking at United Healthcare today, which is one of the biggest gainers in the market and one of the best charts in the market, to be honest with you. Now, they've been growing by 14% per year. Okay, that's almost three times what FedEx has been growing by. And United Healthcare out of Minneapolis is also expected to continue to grow by double digits per year over the next 5 years. You know, this is a half a billion dollar half a trillion dollar company. Now, when I do the math on United Healthcare, UNH, and of course this is one of the key numbers in the Best Stocks Now app, which is almost done. I'm working with them every day. They're getting some last screens in there, and I think that we will be submitting it to Apple maybe by next week. And it's got a lot. There's user list in there and whatnot. Anyways, going back to the valuation of United Healthcare, I calculate 85% upside potential in United Healthcare. One reason for that, it has not participated. You look at this year, it's down 7%. Last year, it was up 5.6%, you know, during a market that was down. In 2021, however, it was up 87%. So I think there's some value that has built up there. Now, this is for the more conservative side, large cap dividend growth, right? That's the category that this fits in. United pays a dividend yield of 1.5%. So, I mean, just using the math, doing the math here, I get 85% for one large cap dividend payer, and I get 30% for the other large cap dividend pair. Now, we don't own United Healthcare, but it's definitely, you know, with the market kind of changing here a little bit, we definitely saw a transition, a new market in the since the first half of the year was sizzling, okay, and now it's really slowed down, you know, simmering maybe, or even slower than that, because of the continued interest rate problem and the Fed. But I think that there's still, you know, if you're selective and watching charts and watching valuations, things are going to pop up like this. They especially pop up when the market is transitioning, okay? Like, I haven't seen United Healthcare pop up in quite some time, but it's making enough of a move here to put it on my, you know, moving it up on my list. And I look at some of the stocks, a few stocks that I currently own in our dividend and growth portfolio, and they're kind of on the waning end a little bit. So that's just part of money management, you know, making some changes, some upgrades from time to time. And I thought I would bring that up. And, you know, the whole healthcare industry, I noticed Humana today. Humana is popping big time, so maybe there's some rotational dollar sector rotation going on here, something to keep your eye on. Humana also is a good value at this level. It's a lot smaller than United Healthcare, but the Louisville company is looking you know, a little bit more promising. Now, these are the stocks that when NVIDIA is flying, nobody wants Humana, right?
Right. Yep.
Okay.
And the market's been begging for sector rotation,
yes,
right? At least some broadening out and more breadth of the market.
AI starts to falter, people are begging for steady, less volatility. So anyways, I'm just pointing out some. Then the last one I'd point out today, Valero's having a good day today, which is one of our largest holdings. Okay, well, I'll have a featured stock for you tomorrow in the newsletter. You get 2 free weeks at GundersonCapital.com. Or if you'd like to talk to us about a little bit more active management, more likely than what you're getting where you're at, 855-611-BEST. 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.